This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in to the Planet Microcap Podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's BobbyKKraft. And you are listening to episode 26. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Jim Collins, editor of the Microcap Guru newsletter and frequent contributor to Forbes and RealMoneyAtTheStreet.com. At SNN, we recently launched a newsletter with Jim to cover the microcap market, and I wanted to share with you our editor's strategy and approach to investing in microcap stocks. The goal for this interview is to understand Jim's key ingredients for microcap stock investing and the importance of financial models when doing your due diligence. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 26 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy my interview with Jim Collins, but first, a word from our sponsor.
A comprehensive streaming of market data, research, and portfolio management application for you. QuoteStream is a real-time streaming quotes and research system designed for the day trader, retail investor, institutional investor, both new and old. QuoteStream offers low latency, tick-by-tick data, advanced charting, comprehensive technical analysis, news, and research. With no software to install and no servers to maintain, QuoteStream is the ideal solution for you. Go to stocknewsnow.com and start your free 7-day trial. Click the QuoteStream banner in the header or real-time quotes in the nav bar to get started building and managing your investments.
For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I have Jim Collins, editor of the Microcap Guru newsletter, on the program. Jim, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to doing an interview with you. So to start off the interview, as I ask everybody, and by the way, I just want to preface this. This is my first time doing an interview via Skype, so please forgive me for any technical difficulties or any text pop-ups. But having made that disclaimer, that's not my first question. Jim, so what is your background and how did you get into microcap stocks?
I started out on Wall Street right out of college a long time ago. I won't say exactly how long, but about 25 years ago, working for Lehman Brothers, doing equity research, which I did also for DLJ, Donaldson, Lufkin, and Jenrette in New York and in London, and also for UBS in London, spending most of that time following the automotive and automotive-related sector. So the core of my background is as a stock analyst, and that's 25 years later, that's still what I'm doing today. In terms of microcaps, I also manage money for individuals through my asset management company, Portfolio Guru LLC. So, you know, one of the things that people are always asking me is, you know, how do we make money and how do we make more money? And, you know, microcaps are a sector or a segment of the market where you can make more profits than you might make in the overall market, and you can make them more quickly. So there's a certain segment of my client tell that likes that and that is willing to take the more risk to get a little more bang for the buck.
And you know, I also mentioned that you do write for the for Real Money at the Street and Forbes. You know, when did you start doing that and why?
I started writing for Real Money in May 2013 and Forbes in November 2014. And I think it's just they're both great platforms for me to get my ideas out. And some of the things that I'm constantly, barraging my clients with emails, I actually sort of turn into longer form columns for those two platforms. And so more people can read them and more people can find out about my strategies. And really just, you know, what I think about the markets. They're obviously very dynamic and there is always something to write about.
Okay, so before I get even more in detail on you know, your process when analyzing microcap stocks and what you look for, you know, just from a macro perspective, and you brought it up a little bit at the beginning, but why microcaps? You know, why did you start looking more and more at this as a place to, you know, start investing your dollars and also your clients' dollars?
I think that, you know, the core strategy that I run is income-based. So the things like high-yielding stocks, preferred stocks, et cetera, they're pretty boring. And again, you know, I was getting some pressure from my clients to try to get some capital returns or more capital returns in addition to the income growth that we're getting. So that's where I really started to attend a lot more conferences and focus more on these smaller emerging companies where there's much more upside, but obviously more risk of extinction. So that's really it, is that I'm trying to find things that aren't fully known by the market, because I think it's that inefficiency where you really make profits over the longer term. And when you're dealing with larger stocks, you know, Apple, Coke, GM, there's much less chance for that kind of inefficiency. Microcaps, you know, some of these things are really, really, really misunderstood. And that's what I'm trying to do for people, is explain them through my newsletter and other ways, and also make some money when the market realizes that it's been wrong.
Okay. So having said all that, you know, prior to making an investment in a microcap stock, what is your due diligence process?
Yeah, for me, it all starts with the documents. And that's something, again, I've been doing for 25 years. But so I'll read the 10-Ks, the annual filings, the 10-Qs, the quarterly filings, the proxy statements, and just try to get an idea of, you know, where the core profitability of this company is. I also like to build earnings models and try to figure out how they're going to do for the next few years, and then discount that back and try to, you know, value the company. So that's really the first step, is just reading the documents, and as well as the press releases and the presentations and those sorts of things.
And what do you look for in that stuff? Like what when you read all of it, like what really stands out to you? You're like, all right, I'm going to read the next one now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, valuing any asset, especially a stock, it's just a matter of figuring out the growth rate and then discounting it back. So what I'm looking for are companies that have the potential to grow more quickly than they are, but that may not be showing up in the current results, and it certainly is not showing up in the current valuation. So, you know, how do you do that? I mean, you look at the numbers. You look at the addressable market, you look at the market share, and you say, you know, this is what their revenues are, this is what their revenues could be, what kind of profitability would they make on that? You keep going out and out and out, farther and farther, and then you keep disaggregating that, and then you keep discounting that back. So it's not to be too academic about it, but it really is all based on the numbers.
It's funny, I actually remember an interview that you did with my dad. I think it was like about a little over a year ago. And I remember my favorite line was, you said, you know, I do love my models. And I don't think you were talking about from, you know, from, you know, Victoria's, you know, Secret. Victoria's Secret.
No, just, yeah, so that's, you know, that's something that when I was doing this for large investment banks, I mean, that's kind of, you had to do it. And everybody had, you know, these gargantuan spreadsheets. When you deal with smaller companies, which are less covered, or in many cases not covered at all by those sorts of banks, I mean, that kind of analysis just doesn't exist. So I feel like when I'm doing it for my clients and for my readers, we're really breaking new ground, and we might be able to find something that's not known. And I think when you find something that's not known, that's when you make real returns.
And this might be a silly question, but you're also talking to somebody that didn't go to business school, and I'm still personally learning how to do these types of models. But how difficult is it to model it out, or model out projected revenues for a company that, you know, we're talking about microcaps? These are very high risk and high reward investments.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, not to get, you know, pedantic, but if you look at some asset managers like Fidelity, the world's largest, I mean, they try to break everything down into units, price, and cost. And I mean, if you're making widgets, it's easy to do that. If you're a social media company, it's a little harder, but it's not impossible. So that's really the key, is just to disaggregate the actual dollar number that you're getting from revenues into some kind of component parts, and then try to forecast what's going to happen to those component parts based on, you know, the market that they're in, the overall economy, different geographies, market share gains, patents that they might be able to monetize. So it's really sort of a basic way of doing it.
And what for you, like, for instance, then, is a company that becomes I guess when it comes to projected revenues, like, what is a percentage growth rate that for you, you're like, oh, this is interesting, because you can model it out and there could be, you know, oh, I think it could maybe grow 5% next year, or maybe this is 15%. Like, what number in your opinion then, like, makes it palpable for you?
Yeah. And again, that's, you know, that's the great thing about microcaps, is that, you know, if Coke is going to grow 5% a year, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But for a microcap, obviously, I mean, what you're looking for is much, much faster. So it has to be at least double-digit growth, but usually it's more like 20, 30, 40%. And then you just sit there and say to yourself, is this real? Can I actually believe this? Because anything that's growing that much faster than the economy, there really has to be a reason. But yeah, I mean, for stocks this small, for sure, you know, 10, 15, 20% is where I start looking at it, rather than stop.
And I guess the goal being is that you want to catch it when it's at that, like, that big growth, or that turning point growth rate, where it's at that 10-15%, you know, before it gets to the Coke level, where it then, you know, it kind of not plateaus, but it levels off a lot more to the 4 or 5%, right?
Exactly. And that's where the market research comes in hand. Mm-hmm. Market, not stock market, but market that this company's end markets and the products, and what are they doing? Do they have a new drug that's going to come out in 3 months? I mean, is that going to cause this thing to look like a hockey stick? Or, you know, is it something that deals with commodity prices, like an oil company, where, you know, you think that things are very much undervalued because of that? So really, I think understanding what they do and the markets that they sell in give me and give analysts, you know, the tools to find out when the inflection point is going to happen. Although, I mean, obviously doing that to the minute is very difficult, but, you know, finding it to the quarter is very lucrative.
So then, you know, when it comes to your stock selection process, I guess this is taking a step back a little bit, but, like, when it comes to your stock selection process, you know, when does a ticker hit your radar screen? Like, what's that initial signal where you're like, okay, I'm going to now start looking more into this now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I try to read as much as I can, and I have, you know, 8 million tabs open on my computer at any given time. And what I'm always looking for is sort of a read through. So there'll be companies that I'm familiar with, and when I'm doing my due diligence on them, I'll look at all their competitors. There might be a company that's, you know, in a sector that I'm just learning about, and then I try to look at all the other companies inside it. So it's really just a matter of just kind of keeping your mind open and doing a lot of reading. I mean, I get, you know, I've on my computer now, I'm looking at an account I have that has 5,200 emails that I need to read. And they're all updates on these companies. And, you know, ultimately that gives you the base to start wanting to look at it. And I do think that top down is important. So when I find a company in a sector that I like, I immediately go to the other ones in that sector to say, you know, hey, I mean, is a rising tide going to lift all boats here?
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we could talk all day about the different buy signals. You know, I'm sure you can even mention a few when I do ask this question. But one thing that I'm always curious about are our sell signals. You know, so I guess maybe give a bit of both. Like, what are some of, like, after doing your research, then what is it that will then let you know, okay, you know what, I'm going to take my starting position now, and, you know, we'll go from there. And then what happens when you've maybe been holding that position for a while, and or even not that long, and you say, oh, this just happened, I think I might sell now.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of you know, staying disciplined, having the models to generate the future cash flows estimates and then discounting them back. So I have a rule of thumb for my clients who are interested in microcaps that before I initiate a position, I look for something that has 50% upside, 55-0. So obviously that's enormous. And where does that come from? It comes from me modeling out the company 3, 4, 5 years, discounting it back and coming up with a fair value. And if the market value is 50% less than the fair value, then, you know, absolutely we'll buy it. So hopefully what happens, and, you know, we've had a good track record here, is that over time, that 50% starts to get priced out of the market. And then, you know, I start running the numbers again. You know, it's not an exact science, but, you know, if 50% starts looking at like 20%, then yeah, I'll sell it and try to look at the next name where I think it's at least 50% again, because the market hasn't realized it yet. So, you know, I'm not a chartist, I'm not a technician, but, you know, over 25 years, there's kind of a feel you get when something has moved and you feel like there was something at the beginning, but some of that premium is gone and it's just time to move on.
I see. So like, this actually leads into my next question, because, you know, in past interviews, management always plays a very, very significant role. So, you know, I guess I'll ask it as a two-part question. You know, when do you typically approach management? And then, you know, one sell signal I've heard in the past too is like when management, you know, tends to change their story. But I could see that maybe conflicting with the way in which you approach it, because what if the numbers still stay in line with what you've modeled out, but maybe something about the story changed? So can you comment on that?
Sure. That's a great question. And I think that the, you know, we can sort of fall in love with these spreadsheets and technology and whatnot, but the most important input into the model is management's guidance on what they see for the next few years. I mean, obviously you can't take that. You have to do your own analysis on it, but I think over time you get, and this is something that, you know, as I said, I've been doing for a long time, you get a good feel for sort of body language, we call it, and when they're more optimistic, when they're less optimistic. You know, are they selling stock? Are they buying back stock? Those sorts of things as well. But I really do try to keep in touch with the management teams as much as humanly possible, and conferences are a great way to do that. Listening to conference calls, I was just listening to one a couple hours ago. And, you know, emails, everything, it's a lot easier these days to do it. But again, that's, you know, long-winded answer, but the number one input in your models should be what you're hearing from the companies, and then your analysis of that.
And when do you typically reach out to management, like relatively early on or after you've modeled everything out?
Yeah, I try to go as early as possible. And I think I'm lucky because I write for The Street and Forbes, and I have the newsletter, the companies, you know, would like to be featured in these things. So it's beneficial for them to talk to me. And I always love talking to companies. I mean, I'll meet with anyone that does anything, even some really ridiculously crazy ones that I never write about. But, you know, 95% of the time it's something that's interesting to me. So there are public relations companies, investor relations firms, investment banking firms, people who host conferences. Just there are a lot of people trying to show me new stories pretty much on a daily basis, and I love that. So that's it's my job to sift through all that.
So then when you're sifting through all of it, you know, what are some of your key ingredients then for a successful microcap stock investment? Maybe you know, if you'd like one of maybe a story or something where you just everything lined up and it was a big win, but please, of course, if you will name one, just please disclose whether or not you still are currently a shareholder.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, it's very different. I mean, it can be a lot of different disciplines. But one of the things, because of my background following autos, which is a cyclical business, and income companies where cash flow is key, is that I feel like I have a good eye for finding companies where The cash flows are not reflected in the value of the stock. So if you want to call that sort of a beaten down name, a turnaround, one of the ones that we own, my clients and I both own, full disclosure right now, is Navios Maritime, ticker symbol NM. So, you know, they own dry bulk ships that carry cargoes like coal, iron ore, and grains from Australia to China, from the U.S. to China, from a lot of different places. And it just as of January and February of this year, I mean, the market was pricing China into extinction, which was ridiculous. So we started buying some of their securities at a very, very, very low ratio to par and also to earnings. And that's one that's worked out really well. So Navios Preferreds are my number one pick if you go to my Real Money page, and they're up 48.9% since I recommended them in January of this year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So basically, I mean, your ingredients and the way in which you approach it is that you kind of have like a pseudo contrarian look to it. It seems like, you know, you obviously you're looking for the companies with cash flows, but you're also want to look at the industries that may be kind of down right now and find kind of the best of microcaps within that industry. Would I be kind of off base there if I made that claim?
No, that's right. I mean, I try to find ideas that just aren't well known. And one of the ways that ideas get to be less well known is that people stop paying attention to them. And especially now, the way that stock investing works with ETFs, there tends to be a very top-down herd mentality. So when I see somebody who's just, you know, sitting in the corner and nobody's talking to him, so to speak, that's one that I'm probably more inclined to look at in terms of trying to, you know, buy and hold.
So I wanted to get into the newsletter. You know, even though the Microcap Guru is a partnership between you and SNN Inc., you know, let's tell my listeners about it, because after all, you know, you do write it.
Yeah, all the details are at microcapguru.com. And it is a monthly piece that comes out in the first week of the month. And it's basically 8 pages of real research on a part of the market where there really isn't much. So because Wall Street doesn't cover these smaller companies because it's not lucrative for them, and because these companies are just smaller and have less internal resources to spread their stories, that's where I try to come in and shed some light on some of these forgotten names. So basically, microcaps sometimes have a derogatory connotation to them, penny stocks, whatever you want to call it. And what I'm trying to do is do real research, the kind that you would get on Apple or Coke or GE, on these smaller stocks. So each monthly issue has a 2-page report on 2 different companies, so 4 pages in total. Also, top-down research on the market itself, the microcap segment of the market, and also different industry sectors within that. So it's basically the kind of thing that if you were reading about the S&P 500, I think you can get this 100 different places. But when you're reading about smaller companies, I've never found it anywhere. So with SNN and you and Shelley, I figured the best way to do it was to actually write it.
Yeah. And we're very proud to be putting this newsletter out there with you. You know, we also recognize that need for a true microcap newsletter. You know, just kind of not just, you know, talking about the you know, some picks and ideas within the newsletter itself, but also this like macro look and how that affects the microcap market. You know, and I thought that was really a crucial part that you brought to the table. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, sometimes when you read like these 5,200 emails that I still have to read, you get some sort of, you know, pitches or come-ons about, you know, this stock is going to go up 1,000,000,000% in any environment. Well, that's not true. I mean, when you invest in anything, you know, a house, anything, you have to know what the market is doing first and then go into your individual picks. So I feel like, again, that's lacking, and it's great that you guys have been so supportive to allow us to get that platform out there, that kind of knowledge out there. You're getting two reports every month, so that's 24 research reports in a year. And, you know, hopefully people will learn something, ask some questions about that. And also, you know, I'm not going to write about things that are that I think will go up 1.4%. I mean, hopefully they'll work. So it's a little bit of both.
So, Jim, other than subscribing to the MicroCap Guru newsletter, what do you think is the most important advice you would give to an up-and-coming MicroCap investor looking at this space?
I think the first thing is to just to really learn how to research a stock. I mean, and that's, you know, there are a bunch of good ways to do that. I took the CFA program, the Chartered Financial Analyst, so that really helped. But even if you don't do that, I mean, you know, reading books like One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch, Ben Graham's work, which Warren Buffett learned from, just some very basic, you know, this is how to look at a stock before you start looking at stocks. Because a lot of times I see what people do is that they have this great idea and then let's hope that we can find out a way to make it seem like it's undervalued. But really, I think what you need to do is learn how to value things before you try to. So hopefully in the newsletter, people will get that from the first three pages of it, which are really macro-based and which will go through some very basic and yet very important fundamentals on equity analysis and valuation.
And so, Jim, where can our audience go and find more information about not only the newsletter, but also you and your contributions to Forbes and Real Money?
For the newsletter, again, it's microcapguru.com. So that's that has a sample of the most recent issue, all the subscription details, all my background. My own personal website is portfolioguruPost.com, and that has a little bit more about what I do for my clients and also links to my columns on Real Money and at Forbes. So either of those two websites are a great source of information on what I'm doing and how I'm looking at the markets.
Jim, thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to reading the September issue of the MicroCap Guru newsletter.
Looking forward to it to myself, Bobby. Thank you very much for all the time. And I really want to thank SNN for all their support. It's been a lot of fun doing it, and I look forward to doing it.
Dude, thank you. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet MicroCap podcast. And thank you, Jim, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast, go to podbean.com and search Planet MicroCap Podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet MicroCap Podcast. Stay tuned for the next Planet MicroCap Podcast, where we'll have our next guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send an email to info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of StockNewsNow.com, the official MicroCap news source, the MicroCap Review magazine, and the MicroCap Guru newsletter. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet MicroCap podcast. Have a great week, everyone.